From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 19th day of July 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. We'll take a look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from Windsor, Illinois and TGM, and then discuss the agricultural weather forecast as we finish out the program today with agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt. Along the way, we'll hear again from Daryl Good about last week's USDA WASDE numbers and what the marketing year average cash sale price might look like. And we'll talk with Erica Lutz, who is the executive director of the Fulbright Scholarship Program at the U.S. Embassy in Belgium. More importantly to me, she has a local connection to the folks up in the Watseka area. Her grandparents are from Crescent City. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Medium from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, holding a short-term and medium-term outlook meeting on commodity and financial market results, July 25th at 5:30 p.m. at the Arcola Community Service Center and 7:30 a.m. July 26th at Yoder's in Arthur. Reservations are required, 866-471-2588.
In Chicago today, futures managed to push above $8 in the corn pit. Those numbers finished like this. The September contract at $8.13 on its close, up 18 cents. December futures at $7.80.5, down 3.75 today, but it was as high as $7.99. The March contract, $7.72, down 11.25. And the May corn at $7.77, down 2.75. July futures, $7.54, 19.5 cents lower. September wheat at $9.34, up 30.75. December at $9.33, up 20.5 in Chicago. Kansas City finished the hard red at $9.31.5, up 25.5 cents. From the bean pit back in Chicago, August contract, $17.31, up 47.5 cents. The high there at $17.49 in the August. September at $16.97, up 49, topped out at $17.07.75. In November, beans topped at $16.73.75. A final price on the day for a close at $16.58, up 38 cents. January futures up 23.75 at $16.35. The March down 22 at $15.23. May at $14.46, down 27.75. Bean meal 20 cents higher at $5.34. Bean oil at $54.39, up 38 cents on the day. August live cattle at $118.95, up 87.5. August feeders at $139.10, $1.90 higher, and lean hogs in the August at $93 and a nickel, 42.5 cents higher for the day. This is the closing market report. Here's what the outside markets look like at the sour. Crude oil, August contract, $92.60 a barrel, up $2.73. Ethanol at $2.71.7. That's just about unchanged on the day. Natural gas at $3.50, up 4.2, and the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.94.4, up 6.7. Gold contract at $1,580.10 in the July, up $9.70, and the dollar now down 0.17 at 82.89. The CRB index at 304.88, that's up 5.8 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, partly sunny. It'll be hot, of course. 95 degrees with a west-northwest wind at about 8 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation yet today, still 40%. The 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1 a.m. this evening. Partly cloudy, a low of 68 with a north wind at 9 miles an hour. And then mostly sunny skies tomorrow. And tomorrow we'll have a high of 88 on a north-northeast wind at 8 to 10 miles. Miles an hour. On a Friday night, mostly clear at a low of 66. Saturday, sunny and 91. Saturday night, clear and 70. Sunday, sunny skies and 94. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 73 degrees. And then Monday, mostly sunny skies. It'll be hot on Monday, a high of 96. Monday night, partly cloudy and 75. Tuesday, partly sunny and 96. Tuesday night, cloudy and 75. And Wednesday of next week, partly sunny, hot again, a high near 96 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Now you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker from CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana on the phone line. Dan, we rallied corn futures to a brand new high, and it's a lifetime high. What do you think of the market today?
Well, you can tell that the market now has shifted its focus back to soybeans after corn the last 3 weeks, basically first part of July. The market started worrying about corn because that's the critical. We started the pollination process because of the early planting, and the corn market took off. Soybeans followed, but not with the vigor that corn was jumping up. We lost a lot on that corn-soybean ratio. It went back almost to 2-1. Now that market has turned around, and you can see where soybeans are the big worry now, with NOAA coming out with their 30-day forecast of hot and dry for the month of August. So there's where the focus is, and that's why soybeans were pretty much the leader here today. You did get the record close with the front month September at up around this 813 level, but December corn actually closed lower. So it does look like we're seeing the market kind of corn's maybe going to try to consolidate here until it gets an official estimate from the USDA, and soybeans are going to worry about declining crop prospects.
Consolidate's one of those words that you use when you're thinking this could go either way from time to time, just marking time, waiting for maybe the next USDA report to come out, I suppose. What's your druthers? Will it go higher or lower?
Well, it's scary up in here because, of at least historically, we've got all the markings that the high should be close. I mean, you've got the news media talking about it. You got Washington talking about it. You've got some USDA projections that we're going to have to cut maybe a billion bushels or so out of demand, maybe 2 billion in demand, depending upon how small you really want to make this corn crop. But, you know, until we actually see some people blink, that's going to be interesting, especially with Vilsack, you know, pushing back ideas that the EPA would tinker with the ethanol mandate at some point in time. So that kind of reassured the market that, at least for the time being, that the ethanol people would continue to grind corn because of the mandate. I'm not too sure. You know, once you get Washington talking about higher food prices, I just remember the 70s too much I get nervous because that's the last place you want people talking about is Washington talking about higher food prices and a record drought in the Midwest. That just scares me that at some point in time, the politicians will get involved in this thing.
Today, Dan, what does your balance sheet say for the end of the marketing year carryouts this year and then for next year as well, corn and beans?
Well, I think USJ is probably still too high on carryout on soybeans. My guess is closer to 150 million bushels. Could even be a little lower than that. Corn is, I think, is probably going to be a little smaller than what USDA is looking at. That I don't think is much of an issue at this point. It's all about new crop and where we're going to be at a year from now, I think, is what's seriously driving the market.
Right, and that's why I asked about both. So at this point, are you using USDA is at 1.2 on carryout at the end of the marketing year for corn? Are you at 900, 800, 700?
Well, I think, first off, we got to put a production number on this crop and what we're going to be at a year from now. I mean, I was messing around with some balance sheets, and it looked to me like you know, how small, if you want to put a national average yield on this crop somewhere around 125, whether it's that small or not, or if it's still, you know, in the 130s, and then you got to subtract probably a larger than normal harvested acre number. In 88, I think we harvested 86%, so if that tells you we could lose a couple million in harvested acres. So, I mean, it looks to me at like at some point in time, everybody's going to have to blink. That would be my guess. Because I think we need to take out maybe 2 billion bushels worth of demand out of the market sometime in corn over the next 12 months, depending upon how small this crop is.
How hard will that be to do?
It's going to be interesting because everybody's waiting at the moment anyway for the other guy to blink. but the livestock people, the way I understand it right now, it's just everything that they put on the feedlots or anything is in the red right now. The question is how long will they continue to do that? We're going to start importing more corn and wheat probably into the United States. That'll kind of cushion some of the shortages. But I think at some point in time the politicians will tinker with the renewable fuels mandate.
That would be not a pretty situation if that were to happen.
No, it would not. I think probably since it's such a political hot potato, nobody wants to touch it until after the election. I just, you know, just automatically you can see that Ohio and Iowa are toss-up states in the presidential race, and I don't, you know, if Obama wants to win those states or have a chance to win those states, I don't think it would be a very good idea to tinker with the renewable fuels mandate because I think farmers would come out in force and the whole ag industry would come out in force to vote against that. And I think last year Obama carried a lot of farm votes because of McCain's position on ethanol. So I think that's one of the reasons why Vilsack is trying to push back on that they're going to probably stay in that mode probably until after the election, and then who knows what happens after the election.
All right. So given that, that tells me between that and the idea that the soybean market has more upside in it at this point simply because beans are in August month and it looks not at this time like it will be a good month for crop production for soybeans, that producers may have time yet for both corn and soybeans. Would you agree with that statement to make actual cash sales at higher prices?
Well, yeah, I would say that. I mean, that's my thinking, my general. I kind of want to stay friendly, at least into the August crop report. By then, we'll have two more weeks of weather, yet if it stays hot and dry, you know, the corn crop and the wheat crop, both are shrinking daily. So I'm kind of looking at more of a 1983 type price pattern. At least I got that on the radar screen. And in the 83, corn market peaked in mid-August, rattled around for about a month, going sideways while soybeans continued to march higher into a September high. And then that's when both markets started to roll down then in late September. So I'm kind of matching up 83 price action more so with today than the 88 type. I know everybody's been talking about 88 drought more, but I look at more of the price action and the analog. And in 83, the market took off right after the 4th of July weekend, just like this market took off to the races right after the 4th of July weekend.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, very well, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and joins us here on the Closing Mark Report for a Thursday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Hey, don't forget to tune into the radio stations for Commodity Week this weekend. You can find it online too at willag.org. Our panelists in studio will include Mike Zuzolo, Jackie Bakes, and Matt Bennett. Matt, of course, you'll hear in just a moment on this program today. Our guest is Dave Smolt from FC Stone. He's the Vice President of Operations, been there for about 25 years. He serves as the risk management consultant to clients in both the agricultural and energy industries, and Dave provides risk management to ethanol clients producing a combined total of about 500 million gallons. We'll talk to him about ethanol and these very high corn prices. It's all on Commodity Week and online too at willag.org. Now, up next, last week, the United States Department of Agriculture, of course, updated the world agricultural supply and demand estimates. I talked to Daryl Good. You heard that once, but we're going to bring it back to you this time as a prepared piece and discuss a little bit about corn and where Daryl thinks the pricing might happen and what you should look forward to in the coming year. USDA in its July World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate made big adjustments to the nation's corn balance sheet. University of Illinois Ag Economist Daryl Good, most everyone in fact, was surprised by the magnitude of the change, but not by the direction. USDA lowered the average national corn yield to 146 bushels to the acre, adjusting both supply and demand for the crop in the coming year to show a 1.2 billion bushel carryout in the fall of 2013. Good is of the opinion all the production numbers could get even smaller and the carryout could drop below 900 million bushels.
I think there's a good chance we'll come down to 900 or lower. I think we could be well below 900 if the yield comes down further, as I expect. We lose some acreage, abandoned acres, and exports turn out to be stronger than projected. I think we could see exports, you know, or ending stocks down to that 750, 800 million bushel level without any problem.
Whatever the case for the size of this year's crop, Good says it's more likely than not that the highest prices will come from now until harvest.
And I think with a yield in the 145 bushel range, recognizing that some of the crop has already been priced at lower levels, I would be thinking in terms of an average price of about 6.25 for next marketing year. Would expect to see prices before and at harvest time much higher than that, you know, at near current levels, if we in fact do a 145 yield, and then prices slowly declining as we go through the year in anticipation of a bigger crop next year and somewhat more abundant supplies. So for every 5 bushels, you take the yield down. If you think it's 140, then I would add about 60 cents to that price expectation.
So 140 bushel to the acre national average corn crop would be $6.85, 135 at $7.45. Those numbers, mind you, are for the whole of the marketing year. Near-term prices could certainly be much higher.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the closing market report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Earlier this week, I had the opportunity to sit down to lunch with Erica Lutz, who I met while I was in Belgium. She has a connection to the local area and to higher education. Erica is the executive director of the Fulbright Scholarship Program. She's located at the U.S. Embassy in Belgium. Talk to her a little bit about what her job is and what kinds of folks might apply for a Fulbright scholarship.
We've had all kinds of famous scholars, between rock star musicians to famous scientists, but I think the next famous person will come from Champaign-Urbana.
So how do they apply, and why would they want to apply?
So Americans who would like to come over to Europe to do a full year-long scholarship would have to go on the CIES or the IIE website. They would apply in either August or October, depending if they're a student or a scholar. And then it takes about 8 months to go through the process. It's 3 letters of recommendation, etc. And by the time that I see it in my office at the U.S. Embassy in January, we let them know sometime in February if they have the scholarship, and you would come for an entire year after that.
Do you know the website address off the top of your head?
Yes. www.iie.org is for students without a PhD, and students who people who have a PhD would go to www.cies.org, and that's for the Fulbright scholarships.
Give me some quick things. How bright do you need to be? I mean, what kinds of grades do you really need to have? What kinds of things need to be in your background to become a Fulbright scholar?
So to be a Fulbright Scholar, you don't necessarily have to be the best and the brightest. We are looking for people who are motivated, who are talented, who will be good ambassadors of the United States to the European Union. So we're looking for dynamic people who are innovative and creative, someone who will be a multiplier effect, so someone who will be able to pass all that information to others. That's the kind of people that we're looking for.
Okay, so one last thing. You have a local connection, especially to my agricultural audience. You have a relative in Crescent City.
That's exactly right. Although I've been the director in Belgium, and I've been living there for 7 years in Europe, I come back every year to Crescent City, Watsika, Gilman, Danforth, that entire area, to visit my grandparents.
And they are?
Wanda and Donald Munsterman, who are, and now that I have this connection here, they were delighted to know that now I have a connection to Champaign-Urbana.
Good farm family from up in that area.
And what a fantastic city. I've been so impressed by coming back here and looking at what has been done to the town and the city and the university. I mean, it's such a vivacious community, and we can't wait to give a Fulbright scholarship to someone from this area.
Erica Lutz is the executive director of the Fulbright Scholarship. She was visiting Champaign this week. And, of course, her grandparents there in Crescent City. Normally, she's located in Brussels, Belgium. Time to check the cash grain market from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Matt Bennett is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Our producer is wondering whether they ought to try to make cash sales if they can figure out how much corn they actually have in the field today.
Yeah, people are going over a whole list of things that they're trying to figure out what we're going to do, and it's a pretty interesting situation. I mean, obviously, with the crop, you know, there's just a lot of unknowns, and unfortunately the crop, you know, it just isn't there in a lot of places. So it's really tough to make any false sales. I mean, a lot of what's going on is positioning, either for insurance purposes or just simply to get out of contracts or to cover themselves.
Now, talk to me about positioning for insurance purposes. What kinds of things are producers doing? What should they be doing?
Well, it's completely unique to the individual. You know, I know that if a producer comes in and talks to me that has the fall harvest option on his insurance, then there's a lot of money on the table since the Deese corn is trading over $2 higher than the spring price, and there's quite a bit a producer can do to protect a good percentage of that at minimal risk. I mean, there's higher risk stuff that you can do that would actually protect a little higher price, but plain and simple, you can protect a bunch of that with very little risk, if any. So, you know, it's just simply a matter of getting out and doing something, seeing what your options are, and actually going forward with a plan.
Then would you be willing to do the same sorts of functions with soybeans?
Yeah, I would. Now, timing obviously is going to be key there, but you know, you look at the soybean situation, and there's a big gap there too. I mean, like almost $4, I think now. So, I mean, whenever you're considering, you can buy a put option probably a dollar into the market pretty cheap, then it's pretty cheap insurance, and it might be such a thing that if a guy needs to cover 20,000 bushels, he does five now and five, you know, a week from now, and so on and so forth. Maybe just do it in increments.
And so I'm hearing that you're thinking corn's closer to being up at the highs than beans.
I don't know. I wish I knew that, Todd. If I did, we'd take a nice vacation this winter. But it's just going to be tough to tell. I mean, there's so much left to be known about the corn crop, so I don't know that it's quite at the high yet. You know, whenever you're looking at this much uncertainty, to me, it's really hard to get a grasp on it. And I think if we came out tomorrow and said 110 is the absolute least that it's going to be, yeah, we might be up strong for a day or two. But once we know what it is, I think that's when we turn around.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn, we're at 842, fall 797, cash beans 1759, fall 1632.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Mark Report for Thursday afternoon. When we'll come back in just 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. This, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media.
It's National Daiquiri Day. The cocktail was supposedly invented around 1900 in a bar named Venus in Santiago, Cuba, about 23 miles east of an iron mine by a group of American mining engineers. It's also St. Vincent de Paul Day, patron saint of horses. On this day in agricultural history in 1104 was the first Flinch Day. A married couple who can prove to a mock court with a jury of bachelors and maidens that they have not had wished themselves unwed are awarded a flinch of bacon that's half a pig. The origins of the custom are in Dunmow, Essex, England. Details are not certain, but references to it go back to 1104. It has been a regular civic event in Dunmow since 1855. And it's now held every 4 years and is frequently televised. In 1814, Samuel Colt was born, an American firearms manufacturer. He made popular the Colt 45. In 1863, Curtis Marbot was born, an American geologist. He was one of the founders of modern soil science. From 1895, he taught geology at the University of Missouri, while also working for the Missouri Geological Survey and directing the Missouri Soil Survey. In 1910, he left Missouri and was a soil scientist for the U.S. Bureau of Soils for the balance of his life. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
And on this fourth day of the business week, we're joined by Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
The National Weather Service has released its long and short-term outlooks on this third Thursday of the month. What do they tell you?
Well, they go for a continuation of above-normal temperatures through almost the entire United States, as a matter of fact, for the month of August. Only the Four Corners are exempt with temperatures near normal in the far northeast, southeast, southwest, and northwest. The rest of the country is above normal and the core of the above-normal temperatures, unfortunately, appear to be centered right on Illinois and covering almost all of the Midwest. That's their outlook for temperatures for August, and then for precipitation, along with the heat, it's below-normal precipitation for that same area of the Midwest. The only above-normal precipitation for August is forecast for the Southwest, along what we call the summer monsoon trail up through Arizona and New Mexico. The three-month outlook going from August, September, October continues at above normal temperatures, this time over the eastern two-thirds of the country. It cools off in the west but stays hot, centered right around that midwestern area of the country, and precipitation continuing below normal there. So it looks like we're going to have more heat than cool, and we're going to have less precipitation than normal as we move into August.
And you agree with the National Weather Service?
On this count, yes. I think that forecast is pretty much on target. It represents persistence and the slow development of an El Nino pattern. We ultimately see rain across the southern tier of states show up as we move into the fall season, and it stays dry for the most of the rest of the country at that time. So, yeah, I won't argue much with this. When in doubt, persistence usually pays off, and this is a persistent pattern.
And then what is your outlook for the next 2 weeks?
The next 2 weeks, we've got drier weather coming. We've got a weak cold front moving across Illinois today. There may be a few showers and thundershowers, especially in northeastern portions of the state. The rest will be just some scattered pop-up showers, and then it'll clear out and cool off for a couple of days. We see some pretty decent temperatures as we get into Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But then warmer weather returns Monday and Tuesday. We get a better chance of showers about the middle of next week, around Wednesday or Thursday. Then cools off briefly again, and then the heat is back in the second week. That's when we see things getting very warm again. So it looks like you're not shaking this hot pattern we've been looking at much of the season.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
That's my pleasure, Todd.
That's agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt joined us here on the Closing Market Report for a Thursday afternoon. You can always hear him again and all of our weather folks online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Support comes from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, holding a short-term and medium-term outlook meeting on commodity and financial market results, July 25th at 5:30 p.m. at the Arcola Community Service Center and 7:30 a.m. July 26th at Yoder's in Arthur. Reservations are required, 866-471-2588.
And that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a good and safe afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.